This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
A zoo in Denmark has made a public request that sparked global outrage and fierce debate. On the surface, it's about feeding animals in captivity, but dig a little deeper and it raises big questions about ethics, emotion, and how we relate to the animals in our lives.
Gender, sexuality, and pop culture. There isn't much Lauren Rosewarne doesn't know, and if she doesn't, we'll make it up.
Good afternoon, Lauren Rosewarne.
Hello, Warren. Thanks for having me.
What exactly did Aalborg Zoo ask the public to do, and why has it stirred up such a strong global reaction?
Yeah, so they've basically advertised on their Facebook page, and seemingly there's ads other places as well, where they're saying if you've got a pet that is at the end of its life, you can donate it to the zoo to be fed to some of their larger animals, think lions, etc. And their argument is that if you make that donation, they're able to not only feed the animal, but provide the animal food in a more natural-like state. So rather than the meat that they'd get butchered from a butcher or a supermarket, here we've got the animal with its fur and bones and all the rest still there, so it's a more natural eating experience.
I don't know. Mm. Having lost a pet last year at the age of 17, the last thing I would have thought of was giving him to a zoo so that he could be fed to an animal. And losing the pet was one of the hardest things that's ever happened. I don't know. It's not something that I could do.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because there was someone in one of the articles I was reading about this who donated her horse. And I have friends who have horses, and when horses get to the end of their lives, it's actually quite expensive to have them euthanized and then have the horse body disposed of. So I can understand that there may be for some people some financial reasons to do this. The woman who had her horse donated to this program, she said she felt like she was making a contribution. And I think there's some people who might rationalize it that way, that they're part of, you know, giving back. The only thing is, it just feels, because we think of pets as pets as opposed to random animals, your contribution is, you know, what, a couple of meals for lions? It feels, I don't know, the way a lot of people think about their pets, particularly in a country like Australia, I think this feels quite egregious to them and not really a sustainable way to feed your animals. If there is a problem in the zoo in terms of getting natural like food for your lions, etc., I think other options have to be sourced rather than live pet donations.
The zoo says it's only accepting animals like chickens, rabbits, guinea pigs and horses, not cats or dogs. Yet the use of the word pet seems to have really set people off. I feel like we're sort of valuing some pets over others there.
But culturally, we do this. The fact that we have animals that we eat and animals that we consider as pets, we're already having an informal hierarchy anyway, and that's very culturally specific. I mean, the fact, for example, that it's okay to butcher horses in Denmark because horses are able to be consumed. That's the case in certain other places in Europe. Whereas in Australia, you're not having horses be butchered for consumption. And I think so just those different standards in terms of how we think about animals and the different values we place on different species or different breeds, I think is part of this story and why it feels very inflammatory. For example, for me, the idea of a horse participating in this feels much more egregious than chickens, because I've never had a chicken as a pet and I've never known anyone with chickens as a pet. But horses, I do only associate as being pets.
There's an irony here, isn't there? Many of us, we feed our own pets meat daily, and zoos obviously need to feed their predators. Why do you think this situation feels so different there?
I think it's the emotive aspect about using pets in this title. I think that's a problem for starters.
They're euthanized beforehand, are they? They're not.
Yes, yes. So it's not throwing them in a kind of, you know, live feeding frenzy type thing, which would just add another element of problem. They're talking about ethical or humane euthanizing of the animals beforehand, but they still want to. They're not going to do any butchering, so they're going to basically euthanize your horse, chop it into, I suppose, smaller pieces, and
like the supermarket would.
Well, except though, you're not seeing fur on. Do horses have fur? Do you call it fur? I guess you call it fur. Hair. Someone will write.
They could just
write
buy
in
a fake rug and throw it on the top of the steak.
Well, this is the thing. Their argument, the zoo's argument, is that it's more natural for them to sort of sit there and tear the meat from the bones and the fur from the whatever. And again. Is that justification enough? Then there are a whole lot of other people in this argument who are saying zoos themselves are a problem in an artificial environment. So trying to cherry pick aspects of nature and give that to these animals that are in captivity, does that actually solve a problem, or is it just the proverbial deck chairs on the Titanic that you're never going to replicate a natural environment anyway? So why add to the cruelty?
We're chatting with Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne about the public backlash facing a zoo in Denmark after it asked for donations of small animals to feed its predators. It sparked a debate in ethics, language, and how we relate to animals. Lauren, Danish zoos, I mean, they're known for being unusually transparent, including previous cases where they've euthanized healthy animals to avoid inbreeding. Do you think part of this backlash comes from confronting something most zoos try to keep hidden?
That's a really good point, in the sense that that transparency, it's not like if we had the open door policy to every zoo around the world, I'm sure we'd be able to sit here and compile a list of things that we would individually find a bit sketchy. And one of the sketchy things that the Danish zoo system is known for is a case from, I think it was 2012 or 14, where a giraffe that was perfectly healthy was euthanized, and it was done in public, so there's video of this, and then fed to their lions. And their justification was that giraffe couldn't be used for breeding purposes because its genes were already overrepresented in the giraffe population. So why not feed it to the lions? And this caused a huge, because it had it, you know, it was Marius was the giraffe's name. It created, of course, a huge backlash because, again, they didn't feel like there was a lot of justification. They're arguing, the zoo, I should say, the zoo is arguing their role is to preserve the species, and you to do that you can't have all the same genes in the pool. It's sort of, we could talk about this endlessly, but that's part of the reason with purebred dogs there are often some genetic problems because the gene pool is too narrow. They're saying we've got to eliminate some of these giraffes, but in the US, as an example, that giraffe probably wouldn't have been euthanized. It would have been given contraception. And that's that cultural difference there. And I suppose, I don't know the answer in Australia, but I dare say we wouldn't let people know that we'd euthanized a healthy giraffe purely because we didn't want it breeding.
Some supporters have argued that this is about a sustainability, that using animals, you know, already destined for euthanasia is better than waste. Do you reckon that's a compelling argument? I mean,
The one thing I was thinking about with that, though, let's say animals that are near the end of their life, often that's because of old age, but sometimes it's because of disease. Now, is that then going to create other problems? Because I can't imagine if you have to run tests on animals that have been donated as to whether they've got, I don't know, because they're asking for chickens, avian flu, for example. Is there a problem with feeding an animal that has something wrong with it, physically wrong with it, to other animals? We've lived through COVID for all these years, which one of the many theories around it was that humans are living too close to animals now. We've sort of encroached on their space. And this creates lots of problems for animal-to-human viruses. And that was one of the first things I thought of. I'm not a scientist, but that concerns me, that I'm not sure all animals should be eating other diseased animals unless it's in desperation.
And the other thing is too, I mean, I know in my experience, animals or pets that are at end of life or in end of life care, you know, they've fed lots of antibiotics and all sorts of things. I mean,
exactly.
There's resistance there that could be passed on to a healthy population of zoo animals as well. I don't know. I'm not a scientist in that area, but I imagine that there's a risk.
Well, certainly one thing I thought of was there's that movie Meth Gator, which I think is kind of like Cocaine Bear, where these are what happens when animals, you know, get a supply of, I think it was drugs in the water. And I straight away thought, are we going to now have these mutant lions who then go on rampages in Denmark? Obviously, that's a hugely, that's the stuff for a horror film. Mm. But I still question whether it's actually a good idea to have sick. And again, they're not talking about sick necessarily, they're saying dying or at the end of their life animals. But again, if your dog was healthy and it was old, you probably aren't going to put it in this program, are you?
No. And
because you don't know when it's going to die.
No, and I suppose the other thing is too, I don't know how older animals are treated, or older pets are treated in Denmark, but maybe there's differences there, and we are judging, I suppose, we're you know, projecting our treatment of end-of-life animals onto them, and they might have a completely different value.
Absolutely. And this is always, we have to be mindful of the sort of different cultural attitudes around a lot of this, because again, it's so culturally specific and we think that what we do here is right and what they do over there is clearly wrong. And this, you cannot pick a issue in the world that we don't do that for. We judge other cultures all the time because what we're used to seems both familiar and correct. So yes, this is a good question. Is there a system in Denmark where your dog gets to 12 years old and we just drive him off to the zoo? Is that what happens, or is this an anomaly? And also, how do you decide? You know, does Fido have three more years in him? Are they going to be three good years, or would he prefer to die this way? And Fido cannot give consent.
And imagine if it went.
So calling it euthanasia. Sorry,
Lauren. Would you prefer? Would you want to be fed to the lions, or do you want to be? The bears.
Look, I want to be in control of my own choices. But yes, if it's a matter of lion or bear, I'm going to pick the gentle euthanasia that they've suggested. Then I'm not so fussed if I feed a lion, admittedly. But again, that's a choice I've made, not Fido.
Lauren, good to chat with you. I look forward to our chat.
I only
chat
bring
next
you
week.
The weirdest stories, Warren.
It's good.
Talk
we love
to you
it.
Next week.
Thanks, Lauren. It's Associate Professor.
See you later.
Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.